Advices Radio Network.
Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
The wrong advices. The wrong advices.
Welcome to Advices Radio. This is episode number 31. I'm your host, Scott McNally. Today I've got a double feature for us. We are going to start the day out with John Simmons. He's an IFBB pro. He is a contest promoter and he's an NPC judge. I've seen John around the Detroit area ever since I got into competitive bodybuilding. He's also a coach and personal trainer. He runs posing clinics. The guy's a big fixture in the Detroit bodybuilding scene. So it's great to have John on. We're going to talk about being the best competitor that you can be today, about how to present yourself on stage and how to be prepared. We're going to talk about the importance of posing. We're going to get into some of John's personal beliefs about training and what's worked for him, what he's found works for other people. And we're also going to talk about just a lot of other stuff, but especially I can't wait. I want to dig back into John's career as a bodybuilder, competing as a pro and coming up in the 90s, because that was a kick-ass era. After that, we're going to go to Austin Stout, and Austin is going to bring us some really good information about adrenal fatigue. It's something that he had experienced, and having gone through that, he learned a lot about it. So Austin's going to bring to us the information that he had picked up. You know, we know Austin from Beast Fitness Radio, and he's also a diet coach. So he's got a lot of information. He's got a lot of experience, and I can't wait for him to bring that to us. So get out your pen and paper. He's going to tell us about some things that we can do to avoid adrenal fatigue. But if you start to get it, if you start having an issue, he's got some suggestions on some supplements and testing. So if this is something that concerns you, definitely write this stuff down and pursue it. Use this show to make your lives better. That's what the purpose is here, hopefully. All right, guys, one more thing. I wanted to say thank you to all of you for liking the Facebook page and liking our new Instagram page. Shout out to Derek for manning that for me. I really appreciate it, Derek. And head on over to advicesradio.com, click the forum button, and you can submit your questions to all of our great shows. I appreciate everybody who's already taking part in the forum. It's growing. It's cool to see, and it's great for everybody to be able to interact. All right, let's get to the program. Welcome back to Advices Radio. Today we have with us IFBB Pro John Simmons. John, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Hey, thanks for being with me. I really appreciate it. I've followed you for a long time. You know, we're both from Michigan. When I got into competing, you were one of the first pros that I had met. And I've always really looked up to you. And it's been really cool seeing you around the Detroit area and seeing you at the various gyms that we both train at. How's your day going?
Pretty good today so far. You know, just been out training with some clients and taking care of a little business.
Nice. So I wanted to bring you on today to talk about the art of bringing your best presentation on stage, because I think that that's something that, you know, we can all always be working on, and I think it's something that you've done really well. And today you're a judge for a bodybuilding competition, and it's something that I think that you could give us some really good insight on. But before we get started on that, I just wanted to talk a little bit about your history, because, man, you came up in the 90s, which was an awesome time, just like a great time in bodybuilding, man. I consider that to be, like, to me, that's like a golden era of the sport.
Yes, absolutely.
So you turned pro, it was 1996, right, at the North Americans?
At the North Americans in 1996 in Canada, yes.
Okay. And so back then at that show, very unlike today, that was literally the only pro card they gave out, wasn't it?
Yes. At the North Americans at that time, only the overall winner won. Only the overall winner was allowed to have a pro card. So, and that show, you know, there were still the different categories of bodybuilding, middleweights, lightweights, and heavyweights, and so forth. But only the overall winner amongst those guys was the one that turned pro.
What were you competing at that day, if you remember?
I weighed in at 217 on that day.
Okay, no kidding. So previous to that, you were under the light heavyweight mark, and you had jumped all the way up to 217 for this show. That's a crazy amount of weight to gain.
Well, when it happened, actually, and I had competed in the USA's not even a year before that, and the North Americans was literally 9 months away, and I competed at that in the Nationals. The year before that, at 197. So what I did was change my way of training, change the whole routine around. Hmm. And 9 months later, the North Americans came up, and I weighed in at 217. So I went from 197 stage weight to 217 stage weight in under a year.
No kidding. What was it about your training that you had changed?
Well, what I did was I added back in more of my compound movements, kept the weight still at a higher range, and kept the reps up to a higher range also, which is the same condition that I train with now. Hmm. And it made all the difference in the world for me, besides adding the extra calories in, and it worked out very well.
Interesting. You know, something I really picked up from you was I remember benching like the 90-pound dumbbells. And, you know, I was looking out of the corner of my eye, always seeing, you know, what's John Simmons doing over there? And what I discovered from watching you and from talking to you is that maybe instead of going to the 100-pound dumbbells, maybe I got the 90s for, let's say, 10 reps. Instead of going to the 100-pound dumbbells, I started increasing the reps and try to get more reps. Maybe shoot for 15 reps, shoot for 20 reps with those 90s, and then go up in the weight, you know? But
Absolutely.
So that's a lot of what you've done, isn't it?
That's pretty much the standard that I've always went by, and that's the standard that I train people by, whether you be male or female. And I believe then that was the correct way of preparing for a show. And when that's done the right way, it's very, very effective. And I think that throughout the years, the people that I've taught that to have done very well with it. So I believe in that as far as bodybuilding goes. You have to remember, bodybuilding is not a sport where you're judged by how much you lift. You know, it's judged by lifting and how it affects your body once you hit the stage. So it's a difference when you look at it and you're training to build muscle instead of training to gain strength.
Yeah.
So you have to know where to divide the line.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. You know, what else I discovered too is training that way, I'm a lot less likely to get hurt than if I just keep piling more weight on the bar.
Yes, absolutely. Now, throughout my whole career, I never ever had any major injuries by the way I trained. I mean, a slight pull here, a slight pull there, but nothing ever been very serious because I was always cautious about the way I trained, the things that I did, how I prepared to do it. And I never let my ego get in the way where using too much weight to cause any injuries. And I always kept that in the back of my mind because, you know, once you get a major injury, you're never ever going to be the same again, regardless.
Yeah.
And I always kept that in mind. And worked. And so far, even to this very day, I've never had any major injuries throughout my 30-year career.
That's awesome. And you know, though, too, you're very humble in the way you're saying this, but, you know, I don't want anybody to think out there that John's just moving like lightweight for 20 reps. I've seen what you do, and you're moving some serious weight still. You've just trained yourself to do it for a higher rep range.
I just trained myself, conditioned myself to do it that way, and you get a better response from the muscle. See, what the deal is, if you can train your body, condition your body to move a heavier amount of weight and get good reps in it at the same time, the muscle doesn't have a choice but to respond. instead of just being routine, where most people going in, they're going to do their 10 reps or their 12 reps per set.
Yeah.
All right. You're only getting maybe about 50 or 60% of what you really could be doing. Should you go up a little bit and push yourself a little bit harder? That way, you're going to get a 100% response from the muscle, and your results will be much better, and they will come at a lot quicker pace.
Yeah. I've seen you especially brutalizing people on like the leg press and squats, man. What kind of rep range do you like for something like a leg press?
Well, it applies with the same thing as with any other body part. On the leg press or even a squat, either one. First of all, your body, your base is based on your lower body, if it's anybody, male or female. It all starts downstairs, you know. Because people don't realize that you get a lot of strength, you get a lot of growth just from doing legs by itself. And people don't look at it that way. They don't believe that, you know, just by doing lower body, it makes the whole body more complete. But it's probably the best thing that you can do if there were one thing that you were going to do to enhance your upper body. That would be something downstairs, legs. That's where it all starts at for me.
Mm.
But to answer your question, I use the same principle that if I were doing chest, that would give me a decent amount of weight where I know that's going to be an ass kicker.
Yeah.
But keep the rep range high and go for it the same way. And nothing will give you a better thorough workout than doing something on legs, because as you know as well as I do, leg work is king. And it's in a whole league by itself. So
if
you want a decent leg workout and do it the right way, you're going to feel it. But the results that you get from it, you know, will be immeasurable. You know, you write your own ticket, go as far as you go when your legs are in the right spot, in the right place where you want them to be. But it's going to have to be done where you're going to have to do some serious work to get there. But when you get to that point, you always need to tell a person who's done some very serious leg workout, not just by looking at his leg, but how his upper body is coming through also.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes total sense to me. You know, like I mentioned, I see you around a lot of the gyms that I train at. Highland Park Powerhouse is one of them. Have you trained there for a long time?
Highland Park is where I started. My very first workout that I did was done in Highland Park.
No kidding.
That's where I started as a kid. I go there after school. On the weekends, I catch the bus down and go in and start training. That's where it all started, right when they were just a storefront. You know, I was in high school. And I go there on the weekend and do my weight training.
Are you talking about back when? So just for the listeners, I want to give everybody a little history here. You know, Detroit is where Powerhouse began, and the Dabish brothers opened up their first gym. Was it 79? Was it
the first gym? Highland Park is the very first one, obviously, as you well know. And it opened up in 1974.
74. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Now
it opened up in 1974, and I stepped foot in there in 1976 as a teenager.
Okay. Now, the first gym they had, I heard it was in the back of a grocery store. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes. It was a grocery store. The first one was a grocery store first. It was grocery store size. It's still pretty decent size. But I remember exactly when the grocery store was still there before they shut it down.
Wow.
And then once they shut it down, the Dabish brothers came in and took it over, and that's where it all started at.
No kidding. And so you've still trained at Powerhouse Highland Park all through this time. Can you tell me a little bit about that history, man? Because when I walk in that gym, I feel an energy in that place, and I know how many great people have come through there. Who are some of the people? I mean, I know I see Ron Love in there all the time. Did Linda Murray used to train there?
Wow, yeah, we got a good clientele base of people who've done well there, you know. Ron Love started there. Linda Murray started there, Miss Olympia, you know, and Ron, Linda, those are some of the pioneers that we got. But people don't realize, too, that Samir Banu, who was also Miss Olympia, did a lot of his training there also. You know, and we've had some other pros that have come through there now, later in the years. Ali Bay, he's a trainer there now. He turned pro out of there, you know, all through the lines. And, of course, Shelby, you know, was another one that came through. But back in the beginning, we had so many good people that came through, not necessarily saying that they all turned pro, but a lot of them that went on to do national shows and still did very well with it. So the list goes on and on and on. So we had some really good people that come through there.
Man, it's cool. So, you know, tell me a little bit today now, fast forwarding here a little, you know, you promote shows. You're still heavily involved with bodybuilding. You're a contest promoter. You're a judge. You know, you're still working with clients. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts about the state of competition today compared to when you came up. What are the differences between bodybuilding competition and the various physique sports that go along with bodybuilding, you know, the figure and bikini and men's physique? How is it different today compared to back then?
Well, in the beginning, you know, as I call it, and that's when I say the beginning, well, when I started, you just had bodybuilding, you had women's bodybuilding, and you had fitness. And among that, you had some mixed pairs, bodybuilding, and when I first started out, that's all you had. Okay. There was no bikini. There was no figure. You know, there was no women's physique. There was no classic physique. There was none of these other things that you have right now. It was just open and shut, basic bodybuilding, and that was it. So most of the men and women who competed then, you know, either they decided that they wanted to be in women's bodybuilding, but at a the only difference was if they want to be middle, light, or heavy. Okay. So you had to distinguish how far you wanted to go in that sport at that time. So most of the girls and most of the men then, the only thing that's to choose from is what the weight division is going to be in. That's all we had.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very different than today. I mean, when I started, men's physique wasn't available yet. You know, my first contest was actually the John Simmons Classic. It was your show. And honestly, man, I put together as much muscle as I could for that show. But realistically, I'm sure there would have been people telling me today, had men's physique been available, that I should have done a men's physique show. I mean, I still did decent. I got second place in my class. But, you know, nonetheless, man, you didn't have the choice back then. I see what you're saying.
Right. Right. You didn't have a choice back then. But the thing that, even though there were not very many choices, you know, the most important thing still was, even then, is about the appearance, about the look that the person brought to the stage. Now, I've always been a stickler more for conditioning and size. I mean, I think that, me personally, a bodybuilder, male or female, really shows what they have about the conditioning that he shows up in. To me, that says that this person has done their work. You know, they put it together. They got enough conditioning, have enough size to make them a complete person instead of just saying that this guy is massive and big. I just don't think that the sport itself is based on the size of a person.
Yeah.
When you have good conditioning to go along with it, good shape, good lines, to me, that's what makes you complete. And that's what, when I look at someone on stage, those are my priorities. That's what I go by. And that's the way I look at it, and that's the way I always will see it.
That makes sense. You know, we always do hear that, you know, conditioning is what wins shows. But you're telling us, though, that that regardless, a smaller guy can beat a bigger guy if he's got that conditioning and he's in shape.
Absolutely right. And it's not always a large man thing. And some people will look at it that way because sometimes they see things that have been coming down through the ages or through different shows where the bigger guys always won. Well, during a certain period of time, that might have been the case. But okay. Now, things are more technical now. Things, you know, technology's better, products are better. Things have completely changed where a guy who may weigh 165, 175 pounds can have himself to look like he could be in another category on stage. But at the same time, have enough mass on him and have enough good conditioning, have enough lines where he can compete against a guy who's 20 pounds heavier. And if this person, honestly, is much better, more conditioned, sharper, and have enough details in his body to say to me that this guy is better, this guy is sharper.
Yeah,
he may not be bigger. But overall, within the categories that we judge by, if he has all that, then he's going to win. He deserves to win. It has nothing to do with what a person weighs or how big they are or how tall they are. It's about who brings the best overall package to the stage.
Okay, so compared to you know, days gone by, compared to, say, let's even say the 90s, do you think that the conditioning shows up better nowadays than it did back then? Do you think guys are looking better? Because I understand what you're saying. The technology is there. The science is there. We have probably a better understanding of, you know, nutrition and getting in shape than we did 20 years ago. But is that actually happening, though, when we actually get to the shows?
Yeah, here's what you have to understand. All right. Guys, in the 90s when I competed, guys still showed up in condition. They still showed up sharp and in shape.
Okay.
But here's the difference. Since technology is different, now that conditioning is able to go to another level.
Okay.
It can be even sharper. It can be even better than it was in the 90s when you only had a few different things that made you look better.
Yeah.
You know, the protein now is more refined. The vitamins now are stronger. You know, the different supplements, the glutamine, the creatine, you know, all those things didn't exist then.
Yeah.
You had basic stuff. You know, these liver tablets is what we had then. Or or we might have had some just bulking protein. These are the things that we had then. But the difference was that guys, regardless of the minimal products that we had, they always worked hard. They always showed up in shape. That's what made the difference. Nothing in this world would take the place of overall training hard and overall physical conditioning. You can take any supplement you want, but if you don't put the work in and still make it a priority, it's not going to happen.
Okay.
The only difference now, 25, 30 years later, is that we have better technology. We have better products to make you look even better. So to put it all in a nutshell, when you have that, you have this new technology, and you have someone who's willing to try their very best to make themselves better, you're going to see a person who's going to show up very, very good, very sharp, very seasoned, is going to look phenomenal.
I see.
If they're doing their work the right way. And that's the major difference between now and then, is the technology and how far one person is taking it than the other.
I see. Yeah, yeah. So in your opinion, are people working as hard as they used to?
Well, I think the work ethic now is about the same.
Okay.
You know, I don't see any difference in the work ethic that guys and girls had then that they do now. Then you had guys and girls who then too would only go to a certain level, which meant that they only went to a certain level competition wise. And you still have that now. It's an individual thing when you look at it from that point.
Yeah.
But overall, I think it's about the same, because sometimes what can happen in a person's career is that they can push themselves to a certain level, and sometimes they're not willing to really, really go that extra mile to make themselves better. That's human nature, and that's never going to change. That was there then, and that's here now. Except for nowadays, you just have more people doing it. You have more different categories. You have different things that we have to deal with now. You have to look at, because you can always tell when someone has really, really become complacent with what they're doing, or say, I'm only going to go to a certain level, because they show up looking the same way year in, year out. You can always tell the difference when someone does something different. But, you know, I think that's about the same as it was then as it is now.
That makes sense. So tell me a little bit about posing. I know that you have posing clinics. I know that you do some over there at Mind and Muscle. And, you know, I see it advertised all over Facebook. What do we need to hear about this? I know that we can't give a lesson about how to pose properly, you know, over the radio, but I think there's probably still a lot of things we can talk about. Like, if you have a guy that's getting ready for a show, how early out would you suggest he starts practicing his posing, and how often should he work on his posing?
Well, here's the way I look at that. There's no limit on posing. And in my opinion, I always say this, there's no such thing as a perfect poser. You may see a guy on stage who was doing a really, really sharp, really complete routine, but I can guarantee you that he has spent countless hours, or a young lady spent countless hours going over and over and over that routine to make it as perfect as you can. There's no such thing as someone being completely perfect on stage. So what that means is that you have to practice year round. It's a thing that you do continuously just to make yourself look better. The routine may become, it may just become a routine thing where you can do it at the snap of a finger, but the difference is, when you hit that stage, you look so much better when you do it, because you practice it over and over and over again. There's no such thing as that, I got to start practicing at the beginning of February, to my show is in May. No, it's a continuous thing. Practice year-round to make yourself look better. And most people make their mistake because they don't practice enough. They don't show them display their body enough. And they may have a great physique going, but they didn't practice enough to display it and then show it enough. I've seen it happen on stage numerous times. And I've known people who've done that, had they had they posed correctly, had they done what they're supposed to do, they would have won. But because they couldn't show it the proper way, and they didn't, they wind up maybe second, third, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I always tell people, too.
It's a major priority. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's no limit on how much you pose. You pose and practice all the time.
Yeah, I've always tried to tell people that, you know, you could take a physique that isn't quite as good as the next guy, but if you can outpose that guy, you might be able to bump yourself up, right?
Yeah, absolutely right. So, you know, when it comes to that, the stage, all right, that's your number one priority. How am I going to display what I have? What am I showing to the judges to let them know that I'm here because I bring in the very best? It shows confidence. You know, you can look at a person on stage and see when the confidence level is up, when they've completely done their work, because it will show. And I look for those things. You know, not only you just look at the body, but you look and see, you can see in a person's eyes when they're completely prepared for it.
It always
comes through.
No kidding. I just, all I can think of is by the time I'm up there, I feel like my eyes look dead at that point.
Yes, I know the feeling.
But so, you know, year round, I'll be honest, it isn't something that I've done. And I'll start when I begin a diet, and I like to start dieting early, you know, maybe 20 weeks out or so, I'll start a diet and just take it real slow. And I'm not usually out of shape at that time to begin with. But I think what it is that off season comes and I'm not in great shape. I don't even want to see myself. I don't want to look at how I look because I'm not happy with, you know, how things are going. I might be getting bigger and that makes me feel good, but I'm not seeing those lines and the cuts and stuff. So I feel like I haven't posed as much in the off season. I think that right there is that could be very helpful, I think, to a lot of people out there and to myself. So that's something that you had done year round while you competed, huh?
Absolutely. And that had nothing to do with what kind of shape I was in the off season, because I knew that when the time came for me to start my prep,
yeah,
the more I posed, the better I was going to look.
That makes sense.
And I did that continuously. So if a person has in the back of their mind that I'm not in great shape right now, so therefore I better not pose, all right, they need to really go back and really rethink how they're going to look at how they're looking at this. Because what you're saying to me and what you're saying to yourself is that I'm limiting myself to only go so far.
Hmm.
You know, so what that means is that if you're looking at yourself right now and you don't have the confidence to know that later on I'm going to look like a major superstar, if you don't think that way,
yeah,
then you really need to step back and prioritize which direction you really want to go in, because you got to have that confidence to know that I'm going to be better and better the more I do this.
I love that.
I practice, the more I pose, the better my body's going to look. You know, so in the off season, the conditioning that I was in never even phased my mind about whether it's going to hinder me from continuously posing. So in the off season, it's exactly what it is. Off season, it's not a priority. The only thing that's priority in off season is making sure I make the gains that I want.
Right.
It has nothing to do with how I prepare, how I pose. So that's a different separation. But if the posing is not there, you can always tell when someone's been practicing when they haven't.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll come out immediately as soon as they hit the stage. So it's a year round thing. You know, it's like an athlete going to spring training in the winter season. Why do they do that? They go do that to make themselves better.
Yeah.
So when the season comes around, hey, I want to be a superstar here. And it will always show when that time comes around. And you look at the same analogy in that way. So if this season is going to be something that a person truly loves, okay, this is something you got to take serious completely year round. It's not a summer thing. It's a year round thing.
Hmm.
If it was just a summer thing, there would be no off season. I wouldn't have to go out and prepare myself to get ready for the, to make gains. I just wait until the season come around and just go on a diet again if I want to stay in the same position. But that's not how it works.
Yeah. So,
you know, you make priorities and make yourself better.
How long would you suggest for everybody out there listening to this? I'm sure the gears are turning now and there's going to be some people that are probably going to start posing that haven't been. How long would you suggest somebody practices on a regular basis?
Well, it doesn't take very long to get up a good posing session when you're on your own. You know, this is what I always tell people, you know, in the beginning. Find a good DVD, you know, find a good show you can look up online and just watch what they do. And then get in front of the mirror and start doing it on your own, you know, very slowly.
Hmm.
Get all the basic poses down, You know, start out by doing something. And then what you do from there, you get a coach or you go to a posing clinic, and then you learn the finer tunes about doing it.
Yeah.
Then you make, these people will make the correction for you. But, you know, this is the easiest way to do it. People will feel more comfortable about doing that when they go to a posing clinic instead of going in there not knowing anything at all. You know, I always tell them that, you know, with the posing clinics are fine. They'll teach you all the basic stuff, but you will be so much further along if you just do some of the things on your own. Take 10 minutes every other day, 10, 15 minutes every other day, go through your shot. Be more familiar with what you're doing, and then you branch up from there. And then you just take it to another level, and then have someone show you the finer tunes about how to make things a little better. There's always room for improvement.
That makes sense. So, you know, speaking of contest and speaking of posing, we've got the John Simmons Classic. I've got four guys that are getting ready for that now. We just started, and this is really early out because that show's not till what? It's May 13th, correct?
May 13th, yes.
Okay, so I just want to put it in everybody's ear out there that if you are going to compete this year, you know, think about it, because there are people out there that are already starting their diets now. So you don't want to start too late, right?
No, you never want to start too late. But you want to have a good plan in place, good strategy in place, and making sure that when you do start your diet, your prep, you start it out nice and slow so that things will be easy for you as you go along. You know, you don't want to cram.
Yeah.
You know, you wait late and you start to cram on a diet, then you're going to have some major problems.
It'll show up, right? You'll see it on stage if you have to crash.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't, you know, the human body doesn't lie. You know, it doesn't, it's not going to say, okay, I'm going to curl for you and hide that up for you. No, it's going to work like that. That's not how it works. So, you know, it'll come out. So when you hit those lights on the stage, everything that you've done will be shown at that time. So if you've only dieted for 4 or 5 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever it is, it's going to show. If you've dieted for 18 weeks and done it the wrong way, it's going to show that way also. So you have to know what you're doing, and you have to give yourself plenty of time to know that, okay, I'm going to start my diet, but if there's something that needs to be corrected, I need to have enough time so that I can make corrections and get on the right track before the show gets here.
Yeah.
You have to know exactly how to do these things.
Do you have any other suggestions? I know we're talking about just a real broad range of topics here as far as being prepared for a contest. Is there anything else that's jumping out at you as a judge that you think would be important for everybody to hear?
Well, I think the major thing, you know, if I had to pass along to someone as far as, now what are you asking me as far as how to prepare for a show in general, or what are you saying exactly?
Yeah, basically, just any advice you have as a judge that you would say, you know, what you're looking for, what you would like to see, and how somebody could improve themselves. Because I know that, you know, a lot of times, especially for people that haven't competed before, that, you know, that we make a lot of mistakes. What are some things that maybe we should look out for when we are getting ready for our shows?
Well, I think some of the major things that any athlete needs to look out for, especially in the beginning stages, is something that should be thought out in advance before even the time comes up that you're going to do like a 14-week or a 16-week prep.
Yeah.
You know, there's a time before that that you have to have things in order to say, okay, this is how I'm going to eat. This is how my food prep is going to go. You know, things have to be prioritized. You know, I'm gonna train for this certain time. I'm gonna train a certain way. I gotta make sure that I train to bring my weaknesses up right now. But there's so many different things that go into a heading like that. But the major thing that people need to watch out for when they're getting ready for a show is that they truly, really have to know exactly what's gonna be going into their system to make sure that it fits their body to where it's going to bring out the best package. Because I say that because some people get a diet from online or they may get it from someone else, and it may not be the best thing for them.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has a different way of their body, metabolic rate, how things are digested, how things are broken down. Certain foods may make you hold water that may another person may not. So you really have to know what you're dealing with instead of using just a certain diet that you get from somewhere that someone else used. And I've seen that happen over and over and over again. So That's a big mistake. People have to know what's going to be good for them, what works best for them, so they can bring out the best back in them. Best way of doing that is to seek someone who has knowledge about what they're doing and making sure that they have the right knowledge, the right nutrition, the right supplements that's going to make them show the best thing that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And that's something that we're always talking about here at Advices Radio and on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. You know, there's just too many people out there now that are just offering these cookie cutter diets, and people are paying money for it because they don't realize. They think that there is a formula. And like you said, there is no one size fits all. It's unfortunate.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. It doesn't work that way. You know, and it's real easy for someone to get caught up in that who doesn't know exactly how that works. Now, you know, there's no great defense to say that this person is not working for them because they don't know any difference in the beginning.
Right.
But here's the thing. When a person starts a diet and they're not seeing any progress, or they're seeing something that's not right here. Now, nobody knows your human body better than you do. You know your body better than anybody else, whether you're beginning or not.
Hmm.
Common sense would tell you that, okay, this is not working for me. I need to figure out or go back to this person and say, this is not working. We need to go somewhere else. And most people don't do that. They stay with it, even though they know that there's something still not right on their prep.
Yeah.
I've had that over and over again. You know, I had to make big corrections with people down the line, and sometimes it's too late. So, you know, a person needs to be honest with themselves first, be honest with what the things they're doing, and have a real good relationship with the person that they're dealing with. And have a person that's going to be true to them, making sure that they're on the right track and making sure they make corrections that's going to make them the best that they can be. There's always a way to make things better, but it has to be done the right way. It has to be done in a timely manner before a person really actually gets into the meat of preparing for a show.
That's some awesome advice, man. I love hearing that. So tell me a little bit about where people can reach out to you, John, and tell me a little bit about the shows you have coming up here this year.
Well, what we have now that's coming up, the posing clinic is starting. There'll be a posing clinic every month.
Okay.
All the way up throughout the summer.
Nice.
So the first one is going to be here January 15th over at Mind & Muscle in Clinton Township, Mind & Muscle Gym. It's going to be from 12 to 3. We're going to have professional coaches there.
Nice.
That's going to teach teach bikini, we're going to teach women's physique, we're going to teach men's bodybuilding, men's physique, we're going to have someone that's going to teach everything. So that's going to be first. That's this Sunday from 12 to 3 at Mind & Muscle. And then, like I said before, we're going to post up a clinic that's going to be coming every month so people can still get prepared as they get closer to their show. But like I said before, you know, the more you pose, the better off you're going to be. So there's no limit on that, you know. And then a person, once they get a certain routine down, then they can practice on their own, but you still got to know the basic stuff to get there. You have to get to that point first.
Sure.
But, other than that, my show is going, like you said before, it's going to be May 13th. It's going to be a really, really nice show. We've got a lot of good stuff planned. There'll be a lot of good local people that's going to be participating in it. So I'm really looking forward to it. So there's some good stuff that's coming up. Lots of good clinics. The involvement with some different companies that's going to make the shows come out a lot better.
Nice.
You know, we got some good stuff coming up for all the shows throughout the year. You know, different way we're going to be doing judging, different things we're going to look at to make sure everybody gets treated fairly. So it's going to be some good stuff that's coming up.
What's going to change in those regards with the way judging is done?
Well, the judging criteria will be the same as it is, you know, what we're going to look for. But the thing about it is we're just going to make sure that we pay more particular attention that nobody really truly gets looked over.
Yeah,
some of the classes are getting very big now, so we're probably gonna start running them through a little bit more than normal just to make sure everybody's got looked at the right way and make sure we do the things the fair way. So we're gonna look at that thing in that way sometimes so we can make sure that things work out better for everyone.
Nice. Well, that's really good to hear. Yeah, man, especially that, like, the men's physique and the bikini, those divisions are just, they're getting so big.
Yeah. And you really got to know how to address those categories because, you know, you have so many people that are real, real close together. They look similar. And you have to know how to judge them fairly. And the only way to do that is making sure that you look at them completely from top to bottom so that you can make sure everyone gets judged fairly, regardless of what class they're in or how many is there. So we want to make sure we do a thorough job this year.
That makes sense, man. And I'm sure everybody will love to hear that, too. You know, nobody wants to feel like they got overlooked at a show.
Absolutely.
So how does it make you feel that, you know, I go to the show still, of course, you know, I see it at all of them, John, and I'm planning on getting back on stage this year. Bodybuilding, this is where my heart is, and I know it's where your heart is too. Our classes, they seem smaller now, and we've got guys that are going to Classic Physique and stuff. What? How do you feel about bodybuilding just kind of being not necessarily the superstar of the show anymore? Just personal opinion, I was wondering.
Well, I think what's happening now, and I think that the that categories have changed, and now you have men's physique, and you have classic physique for some guys, and I think that's a phenomenal thing to do. You know, and not all guys want to be mass monsters, you know, and they want to have a certain look, or they want to say, okay, I think I can do this category better, and they may downsize from bodybuilding to classic physique. And in my opinion, it's still pretty much along the same guidelines. So yeah, it's just that a few things have changed. It's more of a symmetrical thing. You know, the only difference between the classic physique and complete bodybuilding is that the classic physique is a more streamlined, a more full look, but more classical. You know, yeah, more smooth, more suave of a look.
Yeah.
You know, instead of a normal bodybuilding who's a bigger guy, but yet still had the same symmetry. So there's not a whole lot of difference. The only difference is the size. So it's all bodybuilding. It's just that there's a line there that says, okay, this bodybuilder side of it is more of how detailed look I have, how presentable I look, like the Frank Zane look.
Yeah.
Very, very classic look. So it's all the same thing, but it's just a few of the details have changed.
Okay. Yeah. I could appreciate that. I'm a fan to see what happens with classic and to see how that develops. Do you have any information as far as anything that they've talked about with the future of the judging? Because I know that, you know, in the past they were talking about how they wanted it to be kind of slightly softer looking than bodybuilding. But then I've seen some guys that do really well with super hard conditioning. Have there been any advancements in the criteria, or are we still looking for the same things?
Well, in the classic physique, as I mentioned before, there's not really a major difference in it. Okay, you still want to have a good, complete, hard-looking classic physique. That won't change. You know, it's a full look, good classic lines, you know, good hard body, except that the things that you look for is you look into more detail. You know, how's the taper?
Yeah.
You know, how was his classic posing? You know, things like that. That's what makes the difference. But it's still a physique where you have to be hard, you have to be symmetrical, and you have to be well conditioned.
Okay.
It's just that you don't have the mass. You don't have the mass with it. That is the only difference. So yeah, absolutely right. So they have to look at it from that point. And we're gonna pay much more attention to making sure that if you are in classic physique that you actually belong there instead of belonging in bodybuilding, because sometimes guys will be in their own division when they are too big for it, and they wonder why things didn't go their way. So we're going to pay more attention to that also.
Interesting. I'll be curious to see, you know, how that unfolds. It seems to me that classic is really about guys that have a lot of times superior shape, just superior genetics. Because I mean, you could take a guy that looks like okay, but he has average genetics, and then if you put enough muscle on him, he could be successful in bodybuilding and not necessarily have like a great tiny waist or broad shoulders, you know. But with classic physique, it really comes down to looking good without having done all that stuff.
Right, absolutely right. And then, you know, and like I said before, that comes down to how far they really want to go with it. You know, the main thing is that regardless of what category you're in, you know, if this is going to be the division that you choose, make sure that you know what the guidelines are. Make sure that you know that this is the criteria that must be met.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes competitors don't really pay attention to those guidelines, and once they hit the stage, you know, they're in for more of a shock because they didn't meet the criteria, or the criteria was overshot, you know. So, you know, you're going to experience that no matter what. But I think that they need to pay more attention to the rules and see how they fit with this division and make the right choice about where you belong. Be honest with yourself and say, okay, I'm not ready for class of physique. Maybe I should just stick with men's physique right now. Maybe I'll be ready for it maybe next year.
Yeah.
You know, you get that. You get things like that. I think people need to be more assertive on the thing, the division that they're in, and make sure that they get put into the right category that's the best going to fit them.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that if they're talking to people, if they have friends or they're coming out to your posing clinic, that's something that I'm sure you guys would be able to help them with too.
Yes, for sure. Absolutely right. So we can, you know, we can make an assessment and say, okay, I think you would fit good into class of physique right now, or you would fit good into physique right now, or bodybuilding, whichever it may be. You know, sometimes they may come out and they say, well, I want to be in bodybuilding, and they may not be ready for that yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I have to be honest with this person and say, I don't think that's a good move at this moment. You know, now, it may not be something that a person wants to hear.
Right.
But at least they will know that I told them the truth about it. A person needs to be honest with and really feel the assessment that somebody's trying to give them and make sure that they know that they're getting the right information from it. You know, and I think most people will adhere to it because that's what they're there for.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's a tough place to be, to have to be the guy to tell somebody, hey, you know, you might not be ready for this class yet. But listen, if we all want to get better and we all want to improve at what we're doing, I mean, you could still, if you're not ready for bodybuilding yet, maybe let's say men's physique was the place for you. You could still get like a ton of information, a great experience, you know, doing that division. And it gives us an opportunity too, to still be able to get on stage and have fun with it, go through the dieting process, and then, like you were saying, John, maybe come back next year and move up a class.
Yeah, absolutely right. So, you know, the good thing about it is there's no time limit on this sport. You know, you can run this sport up until you're in your 50s or whatever it is and still be able to compete. You know, this is a good thing about the sport of bodybuilding and overall competition. You know,
you didn't
there's get no limit. There's no time. You can still do these things and be very well at it. At any age, it all depends on how you take good care of yourself. And I always try to stress that to people, don't be in a rush.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you have a one and done situation. It doesn't work like that. You have time. Take your time and do it the right way.
Yeah. And it just makes me think too, you know, you got a late start in competition, didn't you? Because you said you trained since you were a kid, but you didn't start competing until what? You were 27?
I didn't compete until I was 28.
Oh, 28. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and I did my first show. I did the Great Lake. And the Great Lakes was in, it was the Central States. And that was my very first show that I competed in. I did it the first time, and I won the light heavyweight, and I won the overall, my very first show. So I waited 5 years building myself up before I decided to step on stage. You know, I gave it the proper time. Even then, I knew, I said, I need to make sure that I'm prepared to do this. And when I did go for it, I was well prepared for it.
Yeah, that's I think that's a lot. People, everybody today, you know, they want to have things happen overnight. And I mean, for you to step back and take 5 years, man, that, you know, kudos to you. And then look at where you came with it too. You know, it didn't stop you. Yeah, that's for sure.
Right. Right. It worked out very well for me. So I have nothing to complain about. I had a good career, and it's made some good benefits for me now. And I feel real good about what the sport has done for me.
That's awesome, John. And thank you for everything that you're doing for the sport, because, you know, you're a big part of the Michigan scene here. You know, with everything that we've talked about today, I've seen you, you know, inspire a lot of people. You've inspired me, and you've given us an outlet and a place to continue doing, you know, what we love doing. So thank you.
Oh, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Is there any other information you'd like to put out there for people to get in touch with you?
Well, anyone who's, you know, can always get in touch with me through my Facebook page. You know, it's pretty easy to find me there. I'm inside the Powerhouse Gym in Novi, the Powerhouse Gym in Highland Park, where I train clients at. You know, so it's pretty simple to find out who I am. It's pretty simple to get in touch with me if anybody needs help with anything or questions answered or need help preparing or whatever it may be. So I'm always available, and I try to make myself available to people to help them out and answer questions for them as much as I can. So just reach out through Facebook, and I'd be more than happy to talk to them.
All right. Awesome. Well, John, thanks a lot for being with me. I really appreciate it.
All right, my man. Thank you very much, and take care of yourself.
You too. Guys, this has been IFBB Pro John Simmons. I'm Scott McNally for Advices Radio. We're out.
Thank you.
sense.
Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McDaley. Today, I've got a friend of mine, Austin Stout. He's a contest prep coach. He's a gym owner. And he's also my brother on another podcast, Beast Fitness Radio, which we've already heard from Alex. And now we've got the other half of Beast Fitness. Austin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing really well, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being here. How's your morning going so far?
So far, so good. You know, boring normal stuff, some emails, preparing a little bit of food, getting some stuff ready for the day, you know.
Do you take any days off from your internet coaching work, or do you do that 7 days a week?
To be completely honest, I probably haven't had a full day off of doing nothing coaching-wise for, a couple years at least, because I remember even on my wedding day, I had people competing that morning. So I was leading them up to prejudging and stuff. And I'm like, hey, I'm about to get married. Text me back after prejudging type of thing. So,
oh, man.
I would say not really. Now that I have this gym, it's insane. I mean, it's a little more than I'd like, but I just keep telling myself we're pushing towards better things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I feel the same way, man. And I'm kind of in the same boat too. I try to not do as much work one day a week, but it's never I've never had a work free day, but at the same time, I mean, I don't want people to think we're complaining. Think we are, as they say, blessed to be stressed.
Well, yeah, I mean, I couldn't. And honestly, every time I think about being bored or having nothing to do, it's not really appealing to me. So, you know, I figure, hey, this is all right.
No, I'm the same way. So tell me a little bit about your gym. This is a fairly recent thing that you've gotten into, isn't it?
Yeah. So we kind of just stumbled upon it. We had some of the people that know me better know that me and my wife, we had a house fire, end of last year, end of 2015, actually.
Oh, man.
And yeah, so it was, you know, we actually just got back from our honeymoon, all this stuff, and it was just a really bad time and chain of events. And essentially, we lost our whole house. And the contractor that was building, you know, rebuilding our house, he was working on setting up this gym for his son. And his son actually moved out of state and decided he wasn't going to come back. So this guy was sitting on this gym that was about 80% done. And he's like, I'm a contractor. You know, I don't really want to run this gym because I'm not, you know, he's like, I know nothing about it. And it's in a small, really, really small town. And it's a smaller gym, but I think that, you know, I was looking at it and the price was right. And the location was good simply because the overhead was low and nice. there was nothing in the whole county.
Really? Wow.
So, right. And I looked at it and I figured, and for the price, honestly, I'm figuring if this thing tanks, I can resell all the equipment and I'll break even.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
You're in Ohio, right?
Yeah, I am. I'm just north of Columbus. I'm about, where I live, I'm actually about 30 minutes north of Columbus, and depending on where you're going in Columbus.
Okay, nice, nice. I'm sure I've been through there a number of times, and my sister lives in Columbus, and of course, we go down to the Arnold Classic, so I've probably passed through your town on the way.
You wouldn't even know it. We have one stoplight.
No kidding. So I imagine, man, it's got to be tough to run a gym. I mean, I know that a gym depends on numbers. You must have like every single person that's into fitness in the whole county coming to you.
Well, I mean, yeah, I would assume it could, just knowing what the population is. But at the same time, I mean, I have a couple friends that have spaces up in Columbus, you know, or in surrounding areas. And I know for a fact that my rent there is about 1/10 of theirs.
Nice.
So, I mean, it just, for me to make money, I mean, I can break even at 100 members, which is literally nothing for most of those big gyms.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's great then, man. So, you know, everybody, I just want to give you a heads up here. Austin and I had been talking a little bit, and he started telling me about issues that he's had with adrenal health. And I feel like central nervous system recovery is a topic that we don't we don't talk about, I think, enough. And maybe in general population, it's not a severe medical issue, for a lot of people. But for us as athletes, I think that it's easy to really overdo it for ourselves. And it's especially easy when we're starting to really push. Like, there's so many people now that are involved in fitness at a competitive level, and they're heading to the gym. You know, some of these guys are going in, you know, two times a day. It's easy to break your system down. And this was a topic that Austin thought was important to him, and he brought it to me. So I thought, yeah, why don't we do a show about this? So I'm really excited, man, to hear, you know, what you have to say about this topic.
Yeah, like we talked about, I think that it's something that does happen a lot, but people don't. I think people know that it's there. You know, we all know that about overtraining and what have you, but I don't think that most people know kind of what the mechanisms are and what things they can do other than train less, you know, just to make their efforts a little bit better. Because really, when we talk about central nervous system and adrenals, it's all a cumulative thing. I mean, a lot of us work a lot of hours and have a lot of outside stressors. And so there's just so much that goes into it that I think people don't factor in.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So tell me a little bit about adrenal health and the issues that can relate to it. I know you were saying that there are a lot of factors. Some of them we can't necessarily avoid, like you said, people that have autoimmune problems. How about for the rest of us? How do these issues come about?
Okay, so there's a few different types of issues, and people have probably heard the term adrenal fatigue. And so that's just basically your adrenals are too taxed. You know, they're demanded to secrete cortisol too often, and you know, they get worn out essentially. So there's a couple different types. There's primary and secondary, and I'm talking about adrenal insufficiency. When your adrenals have been taxed so much that they can't produce the hormones that you need. So the primary is often called Addison's disease, which that just means there's actually a direct problem with your actual adrenal glands. And this isn't as common, just because that's normally where a lot of the autoimmune stuff comes in, where your immune system's basically attacking your adrenal glands. So that's an actual medical issue where you have something autoimmune going on. And a lot of those people also have had other, you know, issues that affect their immune system. Like, some of them have HIV, tuberculosis, cancer, anything that, like, really, you know, really attacks your immune system. So that one isn't really, that one's not so much what I'm talking about with bodybuilders and people into fitness, just because that's something that they would probably had a long time ago, you know, before they ever got into fitness. So the secondary is more of a pituitary issue, where your pituitary gland doesn't signal right, or in my case, signals too much, meaning, you know, it's constantly signaling the adrenal glands to produce cortisol. And all cortisol basically does is it's a response to stress. You know, you get ready for a big set in the gym and you're all pumped up, your body's pumping out cortisol, it gets you ready to go, fight or flight type of thing, you know, adrenaline. So for us as bodybuilders, or anyone into fitness, the issues are normally that it's just overproduction. So normally what happens is you'll have a couple stages where at first you're producing cortisol too often. So if you were to get blood work done or a saliva test done or a urine test done, you would notice that your cortisol is really elevated. And that just means that you're stressed too often and your adrenal glands are being really taxed. And then eventually what happens is when it's elevated for so long, they get worn out and they shrink, and then you have no cortisol and you have no cortisone, which is another precursor. And so you have no response to stress, you can't control inflammation. A lot of the times aldosterone's thrown off, so your kidney function's thrown off. This is more advanced. This is when you have abused, you know, adrenals have been abused for a while.
And it's funny you say this, because, you know, you say that there's no cortisol. And a lot of people, especially guys that are newer to the gym, they start to understand, you know, what cortisol does, and instantly they start asking me, they're like, how do I shut cortisol off? You know, is there a cortisol blocker? How can I live my life without this chemical in my body?
Yeah, well, and which is not at all what you want to do, because really cortisol in the right situation is awesome. You know, sure. When you go in the gym, you're getting ready to squat or whatever, and it's a big set, you know, you're going to go to failure, you're going to do 25 reps, whatever. You want that cortisol freaking pumping. You want your adrenaline through the roof. You want your central nervous system stimulated. But at the same time, after that set's over, you want it to go back down.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, you don't, the thing is, you just don't want to walk around with elevated cortisol all the time and elevated adrenaline. You want it when you're about to do a big set. You want cortisol when you first wake up in the morning because it helps you get going. You don't want it when you're about to go to sleep at night, obviously.
Yeah. Are you familiar do you know Jeff Roberts from Iron Mag Labs? He does the Central Bodybuilding podcast.
Yeah, I don't know him personally. I definitely know of him, though.
He has Addison's, and because of this, he's on just a plethora of medication for it, and he does take two forms of cortisol. One of them, he said that he has to take that first thing in the morning, basically what you're saying, like he can't even get out of bed and feel normal until he's taken that pill.
Yeah, so you're exactly right, and what that probably is like oral hydrocortisone. So we think of the medication hydrocortisone, and it's pretty much the same thing. It's just you have to take it every day. And I know when I was having my issues, it was pretty bad, and we were kind of contemplating taking, you know, supplementing with that at least for a while my adrenals healed. And so that's just like anyone with hormone replacement. It's just like somebody with low testosterone, they take testosterone.
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of thing.
Right on. So from there, you know, you've talked a little bit about these types of problems. Are there any other reasons that somebody could possibly experience issues of this nature with their central nervous system and with the shutdown of cortisol?
Like I said, unless there are a lot, actually. I mean, you can get adrenal insufficiency from a lot of diseases, anything that really taxes your immune system. Cause if you look at blood work for someone that has it, you'll normally notice, and mine was the same way, you'll normally notice your white blood cell count is down. So, you know, your immune system is down. There's some other rare things like, you can have some isolated, deficiencies of corticotropin hormone, which is another signaling hormone. But really in our case, unless you have some autoimmune, like in Jeff's case, it's really more so abuse of your, you know, pituitary and adrenal. Okay. You basically just beat them up.
Okay. So this is something, as we said at the beginning, that, you know, you've had personal experience with. Can you tell me a little bit about your story?
Yeah. So with me, I had adrenal insufficiency, and there's different stages of it. And I mean, the stage that you're in is kind of just opinionated. You can't really, it's not really like you can, there's certain levels that determine which stage you're in, but I was in a couple stages into it, I think. And the thing with me is that was odd is that I just think that I have a really weak nervous system in general. And, cause I've had issues over the years, because there's things that I love to train hard. I love to train intense. Anyone that's trained with me knows that. But the fact of the matter is I have to be pretty selective as to when I do it and stuff, because, I go downhill really quick, and it's unfortunate because, you know, that's what I like to do. But I ended up with opening this gym. And I think a lot of it had to do with the house fire too. I had stress from that, trying to move stuff around and you know, my, this and all that stuff. And the oddest thing was I was getting 7-8 hours of sleep every night. I was, you know, I was trying to deload in training when I felt like I needed it. I was trying to, there was, you know, taking certain adaptogenic herbs and things to help with my adrenals and so on and so forth. But I still, you know, I got to a point where like, man, I just feel horrible. I'm already on testosterone replacement. I know it's not my hormones. I don't know what's wrong. So I actually go to Dr. Serrano, out here in Ohio, and I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with him.
Oh yeah.
So, cause the problem with this is if you go to most doctors, adrenal insufficiency really isn't even on the medical books.
Okay.
So yeah, so he's, you know, we're looking at it. We're like, man, this is odd. You're doing all the right things. So we did a test called the Dutch test, and it's a pretty comprehensive test where you basically, you pee on this piece of, it's like film paper, basically. It dries and you send in the dried urine samples. And what it does is it's a 4-point test, so they can test the peaks and valleys of your cortisol and your adrenal hormones throughout the day.
Interesting.
You also have, yeah, so it's not like you just go in the morning and you test morning cortisol, because there's more to it. So they can see DHEA levels. Hmm. They can see cortisone. They can see aldosterone and so on and so forth. So we did this test. It came back and I was pretty much flatlined. I mean,
no kidding.
It was honestly, I looked at it. I mean, it was as bad as it was honestly kind of just like something I had to laugh at it. I mean, I look at this thing and they just like a blood test, they show ranges. You should be in this range at 9 a.m. or, you know, whenever you wake up, you should be at this range in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
I was flat all day long.
Wow. And it makes sense, man. I mean, you telling me the story and thinking about like what was going on in your life. I mean, just A, getting married, you know, that's a huge life change right there. B, having a house fire, that's a huge life change in itself. And C, starting your own business, not only starting your own, let's say, you know, switching jobs, that's a huge one. And then starting your own business. I mean, that's like a recipe for, I can't imagine how anybody could get through that without some sort of like radical changes to their hormones and shutdown.
Yeah. And I'm sure looking back, I'm sure that's probably what it was. Cause I mean, I was still running my coaching business, which was already busy. So it's,
yeah.
And, you know, and I'm not someone that will let quality suffer. So I will still give all my clients the same amount of time, which right. also just means I'm working more.
Yeah.
So, but any, you know, long story short, I ended up, he got the results back, and anyone knows him, he's kind of a funny guy. He actually emailed me and he's like, "What the fuck is this?" And he said, "This looks like shit. Come see me." So I was like, "Oh God, I'm in trouble." So we go in and we talked about some different options. You know, he talked about possibly temporarily putting me on hydrocortisone. We actually opted out of doing that. We set up some other things, lifestyle wise and with some over the counter supplements. And I knew it was going to be a slow recovery, because it's not like, you know, TRT where you can just, you start taking it and it takes a few weeks for right. it to rise in your blood. Good.
Right. Right.
It was about a six or eight month recovery to get wow. back into normal levels. And through that whole entire time, unfortunately I had to train submaximal on everything. So I literally did not take one single set to failure in about 6 months, which was mentally,
that's painful.
One of the hardest. Oh God, it was terrible.
No kidding.
But yeah, so I ended up everything pretty normal. But I learned, I think I learned a lot along the way about stress and sleep and some different things too that I didn't fully understand before, because I learned a lot about sleep wake cycles and how your body works and just weird little things along the way. Like I noticed that when I had the adrenal insufficiency, I couldn't even stand the light in the morning. It hurt my eyes and I would get headache.
Wow.
So just sensitivity to light. I had a lot of digestive issues that were completely unexplained because I never had them before. And all those things slowly but surely cleared up as I worked on the issues. And sure enough, I can in the gym, if I'm getting ready for a big set, I can actually feel my cortisol, you know, rise. I'm like, oh, I'm ready for this set. Whereas before, I could watch the craziest action movie ever, and I just felt like a zombie. I'm like, I'd get no response to anything. You know what I mean?
That's awful. You know, I experienced something similar to this, probably a couple of times actually, but definitely at the end of my first contest prep. And I remember just not being able to get up off the couch, and I couldn't will myself to stand up at times. And it lasted an extended period of time. It was something that I had no understanding about. I mean, now I'd be able to kind of pinpoint it and understand what I had done. And more so, I would probably better avoid having gotten myself there in the first place, because this was a situation where I really did do it to myself. I think that right there is a key. I think that for us in bodybuilding, a lot of this is prevention. But before we talk about that, though, I wanted to ask you a couple more things. You mentioned the things you learned about the sleep-wake cycle. Can you tell me just a little bit about that? Because it just sounds fascinating, and I feel like I might be able to pick something up out of it.
Okay, yeah. So essentially, when you look at the cortisol or the adrenal hormones on a, like if you had a graph, you would see that it spikes in the morning to get you up. Okay. And by the time you go to bed, they're pretty low because you need to be able to sleep, obviously. So if you look at someone with adrenal insufficiency, you see a couple things. And I know I actually talked to, I'm sure you probably know who Jason Theobald is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So we talked about this because he had some adrenal insufficiency. His was a little bit different than mine, but you'll notice a lot on these charts that someone could wake up with super low cortisol in the morning and really high cortisol at night, so that they couldn't sleep. And right. So I think that's more so what his was. So he would, you know, get that burst of energy at midnight randomly and then couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
But mine was more of a flat line, across the board, and where I could probably just sleep all the time and I wouldn't have felt any better. But you should see on the sleep wake cycle, you should basically, when the sun comes up, you know, your cortisol should rise and you should feel awake. You should be able to get out of bed without having to take, you know, 300 milligrams of caffeine.
Yeah.
You should, you know, naturally the adrenal hormones should start producing themselves. And then as the day goes on, as it gets dark, your body actually will produce melatonin to, you know, according to darkness. So this is one of the things that I learned about people interrupting their sleep wake cycle, is that we have so many artificial lights now with technology, computers, TVs, all that stuff. So one of the things that I did that I noticed was helpful is I try to actually wear these glasses now that are blue light filtering. Yeah, so because I look at my computer all the time. So I know some other people do this, and that's supposed to help with basically filtering out the blue light that's going to interrupt melatonin production and interrupt the normal sleep-wake cycle. So if I'm looking at it at night, it's not going to interrupt the hormone production and I'm going to be able to go to sleep. The same with watching TV. It's basically like an anti-glare. You would not get that certain rays coming through your retina, so you would be able to keep producing the melatonin and the cortisol would continue to go down.
Interesting.
As it should.
Yeah, Carl Lenore told us about this maybe a dozen episodes back. He was on, and he said is it like $5.99 or something, you can pick up these blue blockers, they call them, huh?
They're super cheap, man. I think I might have paid a little more. I think mine might have been $10, but I got them on Amazon Prime.
Nice. And tell me a little bit about these things, because I'm going to go look at them right now while you're telling me too. So you actually you've committed to this and you put these on every night. Does it affect the way you see the television or the way you see your computer screen?
Yeah, it does actually. If you, depending on how tinted the glasses are, like I have mine right here in front of me, and if you look through them, they basically have like a kind of a different color tint to them versus like a clear reading glasses. And if you look right into the front of them, they're almost mirrored where I can see myself in them. So they filter, like I said, they are supposed to filter blue light. And when you look at the TV or you look at the computer screen, it almost gives it like a slightly yellowish reddish tint, depending on what color of screen you're looking at. And, I also messed around with this other filter where I actually could download a complete filter for my computer that would literally kick on at 7 o'clock at night.
I have that set up on my iPhone. They have like a nighttime app or something that's built right into the iPhone now, because it's not something I downloaded. And yeah, I set it so that at 8 o'clock, my screen does. It kind of takes on like a little bit of a yellowy tint.
Yeah, and I have that on my, I have a Samsung phone too, but I do the same thing where it kicks on automatically, and then a certain time in the morning it'll kick back off.
Nice. I got to check that out for my computer too then, because I'm with you. I'm always working. So I'm a lot of times, man, you know, and this probably goes for most of us, that we're in front of a screen like right up to the time we go to bed.
Oh, yeah. And if people like me and my wife, it's really the only time that we have any free time together is about 30 minutes to an hour at night. If we're extremely lucky, there's an hour, but
yeah.
There'll be random Netflix shows or something that we want to watch. Well, I always pop on my glasses, you know, because they do. I notice the difference. I'm like, man, I stare at a screen all day. I don't want to sit here and look at this damn TV screen. So I pop those on, and it does make a huge difference. And for $10, I mean, you can't beat it.
I'm going to have to check them out. You mentioned supplements as well that helped you recover from this. Instead of taking like an oral cortisol, you actually went the natural route. What were some of the supplements that you found helped?
There was a few things. A lot of the adaptogenic herbs like ashwagandha, rhodiola, rhalora, things like that, they're all good for overall balance of adrenals. And the thing that you have to kind of, that gets a little tricky with this, is you have to look at what the herb does. For people that have elevated cortisol, they could take something like, you know, phosphatidylserine that will lower it, which I think a lot of people have heard of that. But in my case, if I took that, I would have been in big trouble.
Why is that?
So, well, because it would have just lowered my cortisol even more.
I see.
So, so you have products like, for example, Matt Porter has his cortisol.
Yeah.
So a lot of people know about, and I know that there's a couple other companies that have phosphatidylserine. And for me, I wouldn't want to take that because, like I said, it would just literally suppress my adrenal function more. But a couple of things that I did use, my main focuses were sleep-wake cycle. So I was making sure that all my hormones at night were, you know, I was getting the right hormones. So melatonin, and because actually on that Dutch test, my melatonin was very low. So they actually show you that on there.
Interesting.
So I was supplementing with melatonin. I was supplementing with 5-HTP for serotonin production.
Okay.
Sometimes if I had a problem winding down, I would use L-theanine, which actually helps produce GABA. So I know some people supplement with GABA itself, but it doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier very well. So this theanine is a little more absorbable in that sense. So those were kind of my nighttime supplements. And in the mornings, I had a slew of things. I mean, I would take my ashwagandha. I actually had a product called Adrenal. It was from RLC Labs, and it was a blend of different adaptogenic roots, astragalus, it had rhodiola, it had a couple things for immune system. So I was also taking extra ester C, vitamin C,
okay,
garlic extract. And if I felt like I was getting sick, I would take echinacea root. I would take a few things for my adrenals, or I'm sorry, for my immune system. So the main points were immune system, adrenals, and hormones at night to sleep.
Interesting. Yeah, these are all things that I think we've talked about here at one time or another. What do you consider to be a decent melatonin dose?
For me, I started kind of high, but I felt like I actually had a retest done and my melatonin in the morning was still elevated. So I'm like, oh, that's bad. I don't want to elevate it when I get up. So I found that about 3 milligrams worked pretty well. And that's as long as I'm swearing on these glasses too, because, and the, you know, basically winding down at night, because that supposed to produce more melatonin. So I assume if I didn't do that, I would probably need 10 milligrams or so.
Okay.
But those, that was one of the main things at night, like I said, was just the melatonin, because the test literally showed that it was pretty much non-existent.
So if somebody does suspect that they're experiencing adrenal fatigue, that their central nervous system is out of whack, what should somebody do, Austin?
You know, the obvious things would be making sure they're periodizing their training, making sure they're deloading. Don't worry if you feel like you're not hardcore. I take the needed breaks. And then you can honestly go online and get this Dutch test. It's a little pricey. If you get it from your doctor, then the insurance will help out with that. But if you order this Dutch test, you can submit it in, and it literally show you exactly what's going on, whether you're overproducing adrenal hormones or whether you're underproducing, and you can address the issue. Like, other than just resting more, you shouldn't really just throw stuff at this, because like I said, if your cortisol is low and you start throwing all these cortisol suppressors at it.
Yeah, that makes total sense, man. That makes total sense to me. Well, thanks a lot, Austin. I really appreciate you coming on here. And, you know, these are things that I'm going to definitely consider, because overall, I mean, in the past, I know that I've definitely been down a similar path. Thankfully, I don't think I'd ever been as bad as you. And I think that the issue is too, people don't realize, they just want to, it's always like mind over matter. They want to keep pushing their bodies and pushing, and not recognize our limits. And once you do suppress things, I mean, you said this took you 8 months to recover from.
Yeah. And the funny thing was, through all that submaximal training, I started to look better and better the entire time.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So how long has it been now since you've recovered? How long ago was that?
I went back to Serrano in the beginning of December. Everything seemed pretty clear. So that puts me May, when we figured it out, up to December. So I think that's about seven months. And, I've actually been able to train to failure and all that good stuff for about a month now.
That's it. Your legs look like they're you've been hammering them hard for a lot longer than a month. I saw a picture you posted. Your quad sweep is looking tremendous.
Well, thanks, man. Like I said, though, it's something to it. I actually continued to look better. I looked fuller. My joints didn't hurt, all that good stuff, the whole time that I wasn't training to failure. I'm not telling anyone to train, not train to failure.
Right, right.
There's something to be said about the whole, you know, periodizing and actually knowing where your limits are. The people see like CT Fletcher and Mike Rashid and all these guys that overtraining's bullshit and this and that, and they think, you know, it's just like, man, that's not the truth. We don't all, our genetics aren't all the same. Our limits are all completely different. I mean, you've had Alex on.
Yeah.
Alex is someone I literally think could not overtrain himself if he wanted to.
No kidding. That's what I've heard. I heard him say that people think that he's like indestructible. What's up with that? He just he doesn't ever break down, huh?
It's crazy, because I'm somebody that I mentally could out-train my body.
Yeah.
A lot of people will stop before that. You know what I mean? Like, mentally they'll break before their body breaks.
Yeah.
I tell you what, he can do crazy amounts of volume with plenty of sets in the high intensity range, and it just seems like he never breaks down. If I do one high rep set of squats and I push myself to where I'm, you know, throwing up or whatever, something crazy, I'm freaking down out for 5 days.
I know exactly what you mean. I'm going to train legs with Shelby Starnes in a few hours, so I imagine I'm gonna need 5 days to recover from that one.
Yeah, and it's kind of sucks though, you know, because it's like man, I like to train like that, but I've had so many damn issues and past and present that I'm like, man, I do want to look good, obviously. I don't just want to go to the gym for the sake of killing myself. And I think that's a good point. It's like, right, exhaustion, you know, exhaustion and is not necessarily a good marker of progression.
Yeah, that's a huge point. And I think one of the big take homes here too is to listen to your body and not get yourself in this position in the first place, right?
Absolutely, because it's a big ass hole to dig yourself out of.
No kidding. So now that you're feeling better and things are working for you again, what's the upcoming goals for your personal physique?
Well, I've been trying to get on stage again for about the last 2 years, and then my house burnt down and I had this issue. So this year, I think since everything's clear, I'm actually getting ready to start prep soon. I don't have an exact show in mind, but my goal, ultimately, my goal would be to do a junior national level show in 2018.
Nice.
But I haven't competed in, it's been 3 years now, and I'll probably be about a good 20 to 22 pounds heavier on stage. So I'm actually at a point where I can be competitive at that national level now, hopefully.
Excellent. Where do you figure you'll weigh in at?
I think looking at it now, I'm pretty lean, so I don't think that it will be too drastic of a drop. Once you start tweaking hormones and stuff,
Right.
I would imagine probably low 190s, and then I'm hoping, by next year, if I have a good post show period, I can bring it up to the top of that light heavy class.
Nice. That's a competitive class, man. That'll be a lot of fun. So you told me too that the information you've shared here, this is kind of the summation of a larger project you did where you kind of cataloged everything that's happened on video, right? Where can people find that if they wanted to learn a little bit more about this stuff?
It's on my, I have a YouTube channel. I don't put a ton of advertise my YouTube channel a lot. I just kind of use it to as a means to upload videos,
Yeah, gotcha.
but I can, if you'd like, I actually, there was, I think 8 videos. I can send you the links if you want to post them in the description or something. I mean, it's all there. I basically go through what happened originally. I go through, couple follow-up episodes, like when I talk to the doctor and stuff. There's a supplement episode. There is a lifestyle episode. There's a nutrition episode, and there's a training episode. So I basically cover all the bases.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that for sure then, because the way I see this, there's got to be somebody out there that this is really hitting home for. And if we can help that guy or girl out, it'll definitely be worthwhile to have shared that information. So besides that, and besides Beast Fitness Radio, where else can people find you?
I have a website. It's integratedmandh.com. My company's Integrated Muscle and Health. So they can find me there and on Facebook, on Instagram at Austin Stout or at Austin ST8 on Instagram, and my email address. I have the oldest email ever. I have an AOL email,
No,
but
really?
The way I see it is I have so many freaking contacts on here, I just don't change it.
No, that
And
makes sense.
I figure if Dave Palumbo can have an AOL email, I can do it, right?
Right on.
So they can reach me at datas4, that's DATAS and the number 4 at AOL, and I'm normally pretty quick to respond there as well.
All right. Well, thanks for being with me, Austin. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
Guys, for Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with Austin Stout. Rise high, with emotion, we're changing our ways, taking different roads. Love will tear us apart again. Love will tear us apart.
Advices Radio Network.